Hi, I'm Corey Gergen.
I'm Molly Slaman.
I'm Eric Lewis. And this is Technically Pop.
We are here today to talk about Ireland and Irishness as depicted in television and film. 2020 as a year saw two big high-profile releases in what I think we're going to call a genre of Irish fiction, maybe? Is that fair?
I think that's totally fair.
Yeah.
In April, Hulu released in America Normal People, a television adaptation of Sally Rooney's novel of the same name. And in December, the film Wild Mountain Time was released.
Yes.
Which I think none of us have seen, but we maybe want to talk about first.
Yeah, I think so.
Be open to that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Can we get like a brief summary of Wild Mountain Time?
Absolutely.
Do you want to take the lead, Molly?
I do. Thank you, Eric. So I've only seen the trailer.
That's enough.
But it appears to be, when you begin the trailer, you are transported back to approximately 1840 Ireland, except Christopher Walken is also there for some reason, and his Irish accent sounds exactly like what you would think Christopher Walken's Irish accent sounds like. And it's, you know, sort of like a Romeo and Juliet type story, apparently. There are these two warring families, and they both...
Oh, I can go into more detail, but go on.
Sorry. Oh, yes. And they both appear to have, like, young, attractive children. One's a woman, one's a man. You know, their love can never be. And everyone's wearing sort of, like, traditional 1840s Irish peasant garb. Everyone's... apparently working the land with like pre-industrial tools and implements. And then all of a sudden, the woman lead, who's Emily Blunt, yells, you know, well, I'll freeze my eggs. And that's your first clue that you're like, wait, what is it? And then earth-shatteringly, you realize you are apparently somehow in the 21st century. It knows more than me. So...
Yes, so I am an aficionado of bad movie podcasts, and I feel like Wild Mountain Time is the bad movie of the moment. So I've been hearing lots of people talking about it in detail. So yes, you would think, because it would make narrative sense, that this is a Romeo and Juliet story about warring families. But no, the families get along fine. They don't have any problems.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
Yes.
No, the family wants the wedding. Yeah.
The family wants it so bad. And, like, the experience of people watching the movie is apparently just, like, why the hell aren't these people together? They clearly like each other. Why aren't they together? It turns out the reason that they are not together is that there are some psychological issues in the way. And I think his name is Anthony. Mm-hmm. Oh, I forget. He's in 50 Shades of Grey. What's that? Jamie Dornan. Yes. Jamie Dornan's character believes that he is a honeybee.
Like, what?
He is a character who is of the belief that he is a honeybee. This is evidenced in the film by a scene when he is a child, when he smells a flower and gets pollen on his nose. Other than that, he does normal human stuff. Like, he doesn't buzz at people. Like, he seems to function like a human being, but he believes he's a honeybee, which gets in the way of his romantic life. But Corey, go on.
He has managed to keep this a secret from everyone. It's the weirdest and strangest plot twist that I've ever heard. I also, just a couple of things to connect back to what Molly was saying about how this movie seems to take place in like a pre-industrial world, sort of like rooted in like the land. Emily Blunt's character is named Rosemary, which is a perfectly lovely name. I know more than one person named Rosemary, but it just I hear it that way, especially given Molly's reading of it. And then there's a love triangle, because there is there's an American who comes.
John Hamm.
And it is mm-hmm. John Hamm. And his name is Adam. And I just find this to all be so clumsy and horrifying. That like the good American Adam has come.
And he whisks her off to New York, and she reacts like she's never been in a city before. But assuredly, this woman would have been to Dublin, if not London. And it just makes absolutely no sense.
Do you think, so one thing we've been talking about is the fact that Ireland seems to be stuck in time that doesn't match up with the rest of the movie. Like, is this secretly a time travel movie? Is there a second twist behind the Bumblebee one that just... only the viewer in the know can see.
I would, I'd watch that.
Me too. And I feel like the Bumblebee thing is what seems most interesting about the movie to me. It sounds like it kind of saves it. I mean, it's not a good movie.
I must see this film. Like, I've been sort of talking about it for a while, but I think this honeybee thing just really cemented me.
Yeah, I think if I had my act together, I would have watched it last night. I was very tempted to watch it in preparation. But then, like, do I want to pay money for this movie? That I wasn't sure of.
I mean, it depends on how much. I'd pay under $10 to see it, I think.
Yeah.
It's the kind of movie that I think was done a disservice by the pandemic in a lot of ways. Because, Molly, we went to see Cats the movie together last year. This is absolutely the kind of movie that I would buy a ticket to like watch with friends.
The problem is, we can't do that. When we went to see Cats, Corey, do you remember that the like party in front of us? It was like a group of friends, and they clearly like were earnestly seeing Cats.
Yes,
which kind of made me feel bad about laughing because like clearly this was something they were actually looking forward to in a different way than we were.
You're right. Maybe. I hope we weren't bullies.
I hope so, too.
I think that's a good hope. I'm so jealous that you got to see Cats in theaters, by the way. What I will say is, I would love to see Wild Mountain Time in a theater with people who are there to see it earnestly. I just want to see who these people are. Like, who is like, yes, I need this movie in my life. I also think the movie is fascinating. So it's... it's an adaptation from a play, but I think it's written and directed by John Patrick Shanley, the guy who did Moonstruck. And I feel like that is a movie that deals with ethnic identity and like Italian American identity in like a similarly whimsical but far more successful way. And it just seems like he tried to do the same thing with a different white ethnicity, and it just like did not work at all.
I'm on his IMDb page now, and his IMDb page is fascinating. He's directed three films since 1990. He directed Joe Versus the Volcano, which is a failed Tom Hanks vehicle. He directed Doubt in 2008,
which was I had a lot of hopes for that movie, and it was a complete mess. Like, it totally fell apart.
Yeah, right. And sort of I agree. And then Wild Mountain Time, his writing credits are somehow even weirder. So yeah, Moonstruck, written 1987, Joe Versus the Volcano. So that was a passion project. Congo, the 1995 Michael Crichton adaptation about very intelligent and murderous apes in the titular Congo. We would all do well to forget about it. And just like other random stuff. What a strange career. And yeah, like Moonstruck was the high point in 87.
How odd. But so there's a lot of schmaltzy, terrible movies about Ireland, of course. But 2020 also saw the release of a really good one, which is the Hulu, the aforementioned Hulu series adaptation of Normal People, which I think we all really liked, right?
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
So for those who haven't seen it or read it, Normal People is first a novel by quintessential millennial novelist, Alvin Mooney, that focuses on the relationship between two young people from a small town in Sligo in the northwest of Ireland, Marianne and, I can't believe this, I'm completely blanking on
Connell.
Connell, that's right, yes. And they grow up together. She's kind of both the kind of rich girl in town and a social outcast. He's kind of the popular good athlete. They go to Trinity. They start sleeping together in high school, but it's kind of like a secret relationship. They go to Trinity. They basically have a big on-again, off-again relationship that the novel and then the show sort of tracks. But unlike Wild Mountain Time, this was actually written by an Irishman, which in large part for why it was so much better. But it was just genuinely both a really good novel and the adaptation came off super cleanly, which is always really nice to see.
Yeah, well, and this actually... Do we want to talk about the reviews, Molly, that you shared with us ahead of time?
Oh, yes. So,
okay. Well,
start with the bad one or start with the good one?
Let me just, by way of transition, I will point out. So, yes, so there are these two reviews, one very weird and bad one in New York Books, and one that raises some interesting points in The New Yorker. Neither of these reviews really foreground this as an Irish text. The bad one very explicitly talks about it as a millennial text.
A millennial, a text, a balletic millennial bedtime.
Thank you. Yes. So this Katie Waldman review in The New Yorker puts her into conversation with Nisha Dolan, who is another Irish author. But the review itself is not really about Irishness or the Irish qualities of these texts. Where do you all want to start with these reviews?
Well, I guess maybe to play off what we were just saying with Wild Mountain Time, maybe we start with the with the bad one, the New York review,
yes.
The Laurie Moore.
I get the sense that Corey wanted that to be your answer. But anyway, go on.
It's a little difficult to pick out the particularly sort of, I guess, choice elements of this. But I guess let's start with this one. That's, I think, the third paragraph when she writes, "The generations have always sized up one another in broad categorical descriptors. Though much current media attention is given to the millennial disdain for their elders, okay, boomer, baby boomers, who are sometimes their parents, is often discussed more quietly." Do we agree with that? That we don't hear a lot about baby boomers?
Maybe
that's
TikTok.
A fascinating take.
Like,
was her
research limited to TikTok?
I don't even know that she knows what TikTok is. Yeah.
Right.
Corey, you actually made the exact point that I was about to make, just because I was thinking like, okay, maybe Laurie Moore has a far more unconventional media consumption diet than I assumed. Like, maybe she isn't interested in mainstream coverage, which I feel like is all about how millennials are destroying various industries or things like that. Instead, yeah, all she's doing is watching TikTok videos in which people complain about boomers. And I'm like, well, okay, good for you. That's a small slice of the conversation.
And it just goes on. Like, this is, as I sort of alluded to, I think it is worth making clear that the headline of this review is the balletic, I'm not even sure I'm saying that right. It's like ballet with an IC. Balletic.
Balletic is right.
I think you're saying it right. Yeah.
Balletic millennial bedtimes of normal people. The subhead makes similarly little sense. The series portrays states of mind much better than the novel does. Rooney is not likely to hear from viewers, "Your book was better," at least not very often or accurately, but she also may not care a whit. Which I think would, I think the ideas I liked, right? The ideas I liked the TV show better than the book, but then she doesn't write about that at all. She just writes these bizarrely sweeping conclusions about generational warfare.
Yes. Some of them are so good. Sorry, I interrupted you, Corey.
No. But go on.
Oh, I wanted to highlight one of the ones that just stands out to me as so insane is this is from the next paragraph. Millennials are boundary conscious and cannot be touched by anyone, even on the sleeve, without consent. But with consent, we'll have hookups with total strangers and enact desire in frightening postures of BDSM. A yes. term, and maybe even a thing, not to sound too much like Philip Larkin, that I'm quite sure did not exist prior to 1983.
That's right! I forgot that.
That's maybe the highlight of the piece for me, but.
So perfect, because it's like, she doesn't think BDSM existed before 30 years ago. Or no, 40 years ago.
40 years ago.
But it's also like such a great like similarity. There's that Bill O'Reilly line where he's like, all they care about is consent. You can have 6, 7, 8 partners as long as everyone's consenting. And it's like, yeah. Well, yeah. Like,
yeah.
You're
yes.
almost there.
yeah. Like, you're saying all the right things. Your tone is really weird. But also, I think it's just so fascinating because, I don't know, it reads almost kind of like, Lori Moore, is there like news coming out about you that you want to head off by complaining about how how touchy millennials are on consent? It's just, and then, like, this is an article that tells us very little about the book, or this is a review that tells us very little about the book. It tells us a little bit, I guess, about millennials, but it tells us a lot about Lori Moore.
It tells us a lot about what Lori Moore thinks of millennials. For sure.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
But then there's actually a pretty good review that's in The New Yorker by Katie Waldman. And, you know, she has some points that I don't, you know, necessarily know that I'd agree with. But the last two paragraphs in particular I think are really interesting, where she says that I'm quoting here. This is from the very end of the Waldman. And she's comparing her to Nisha Dolan here as well. The world of the book feels rigged as if its purpose were to produce an outcome that maximally flatters its protagonists. It promulgates a dream in which normal people ride their gifts to the top, even as the gifts confirm that these people were never normal to begin with. What's more, the structure takes on ostensibly good things, namely self-awareness, and empties them of meaning. It co-opts the good things to help the winners win. And then there's a glib joke to be made about how this approach, far from interrogating capitalism, actually mirrors it. But I'm reminded more of Calvinism, its vision of the sainted and the damned, and of the scrabbling for signifiers that mark one out as elect. And I think this is kind of an interesting insight to bring up because, you know, as Corey pointed out, neither of these reviews discuss this novel or this show as Irish in any way at all. And one way that I think gets noted is there's almost no discussion of Catholicism or even religion at all. Like Katie Waldman talks about Calvinism, but that's not, you know, very closely related to Catholicism.
You could say they are diametrically opposed in some ways.
That's also interesting too. Like neither of these sort of treat the Irish cultural landscape, neither of these reviews and neither of these books, I guess in these sort of like patty Irish ways that you might see from something like Wild Mountain Time, right?
Yes, exactly. I do wonder. Part of me wonders whether it goes back to that idea of time travel, whether the like broad cultural associations with Ireland outside of Ireland, of course, imagine an Ireland of the past. So something that is as contemporary as normal people is just doesn't read as Irish.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
It is just another millennial, right? Yeah. Yeah. It's a very, I think that sort of like, I guess mainstream view you're citing is like a very condescending view to Ireland.
Yes.
Right?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. They're these quaint little people on their quaint little island, so stuck in the past.
Yes. Real quickly, in talking about condescensions toward the Irish, I think it's important to remember, I don't know, I guess that level of condescension in context. Like, Molly, I remember that you had a really great sort of one sentence take on Wild Mountain Time. I hope I'm not putting you too much on the spot and you can't recall it. But.
I haven't, but here's the funny thing. Corey also reminded me I had a take and I forgot it. And then he reminded me, and I have since forgotten it again.
Oh, okay. Well, I think I remember it. Basically, what you said, and I thought it was so great and important to share, which is why I wanted to bring it up again, is that you said something along the lines of, like, it's not possible to be racist against the Irish, but Wild Mountain Time is racist against the Irish.
Yeah, something along those lines.
Yeah. And I wanted to bring it back up and think about it because I – I think that is a strong reading of Wild Mountain Time, a strong reading of a lot of typical views about Irishness and Ireland, but I think it does a really good job of positioning such attitudes against Irish people in relation to more threatening attitudes, like you might think, just given events recent to our recording at the time we're recording this, like anti-Asian xenophobia and stuff like that. And I think that Irish studies too often falls into Irish victimhood and this obsessive examination of the way that the Irish actually had it worse than X other group because they were prejudiced against and they were white the whole time, which somehow makes it, I don't know, more sinister. That's all. That's a darker note, but
you get this a lot, especially like, you know, I can't tell you how many like family members I have who post that like meme about the Irish slaves. You know what I mean? The Irish. That whole thing. It's important to separate out, like, I guess, like, the kind of condescension that gets Wild Mountain Time made from, you know. I don't know how to finish that sentence. I'm sorry.
No, but I agree with you. Yes. Sorry, I maybe took us off on a tangent there. dealing with some
I'm so glad you did. So very glad you did.
Mm. Oh, but where we were talking about before we went on this tangent is talking about the notes from the New Yorker Review in terms of the Calvinist nature of these texts that seem to posit these so-called normal people who aren't so normal, these protagonists who are always special and always set up for success, and how that creates an odd coming-of-age narrative.
You see that sort of Calvinist predetermination too with people who aren't even the protagonists, right? In a way that I think it is kind of interesting to unpack. Like Connell has a friend from back in Sligo who's again whose name I'm unfortunately blanking on, but he has mental health struggles throughout the book/series. I mean, it kind of naturally ends with his dying by suicide, right? That's presented as like, well, this is what's been predestined. This is what's supposed to have happened. Every time that Marianne and Connell get together, after a long period apart, like that's also kind of presented as, oh, this was always in the stars. This was always what was going to happen. Marianne has an abusive boyfriend and then later participates in BDSM on an exchange trip to Sweden. And that's like, well, sure, yeah, BDSM would be the natural outcome of, like, this abusive boyfriend you previously had, right? It maps really nicely into this Calvinist framework that Waldman has identified. But it also kind of, I think, maps really well into – I think it lends itself really nicely to a Marxist reading, right? Marianne is set up for success because she was born rich. And, like, there was kind of no way Marianne was ever going to fail, right?
Yeah. Yes. Sorry, I'm trying to think of Connell, who is
good. I was hoping you would pick up that thread I left.
Yes.
In.
Yeah, just because Connell is not rich. Like the way in which he and Marianne start interacting and then eventually become friends and then start their secret relationship is that Connell's mother is a house cleaner for Marianne's family. And so there is this stark class difference between them. And yet both of them eventually succeed. I don't think in any sort of upward mobility exists and everything's happy sort of way, but,
I mean, even Connell's success is he gets into like a master's degree in New York, right?
True.
Which, I mean, I assume he's going to have to take out just massive loans to attend, right?
That's a good point. And like,
all your successes are tinged by this financial burden.
Yeah. One of the things that strikes me as potentially predetermined and as making this a specifically Irish text is, the omnipresence of this idea of immigration and the fact that even though they come together however many times, pun unintended, and thanks for laughing at that. Wasn't sure whether that was deserved. But even though they reunite however many times after long times apart, the novel ends and the show ends with their parting ways, with an uncertain future, with Connell leaving to go to the United States to pursue his future. And that strikes me as a particularly Irish narrative.
Yeah, it's kind of bound up in that kind of time travel thing, right? Your future lies, even for Irish people, your future lies elsewhere, right? Like Ireland is your past and maybe your present, but it's you have to go elsewhere to have a meaningful future. I don't know how else to phrase that. I don't really know what I want to do.
No, well, I mean, your mentioning of the loans that he would have to take out sort of is making me think about that ending more too. I mean, presumably, right?
I can't imagine how for it.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And I really like this Waldman review and I like this point. But I also think, I think that she could read the ending of this novel more generously than she does. And I feel like, like sending this character to New York to get his MFA in the 21st century. Sally Rooney knows that's not a happy ending. Right. And likely that's not a happy ending. Right. I don't know. He's chasing his dream, but he's taking on massive amount of debts to move across the world to enter a profession that is economically exploitative, right? Like, that's what he's doing.
Right, yeah. This is not the happy ending that the traditional sort of, like, success, bootstrappy, educational attainment narrative would lead you to believe. Yeah.
Right.
I agree with that completely. And his first, I guess, sort of like smaller voyage for educational attainment when he leaves Sligo to go to Trinity is not an immediate success either, right? He's really alone. He's super lonely. He has a really hard time making friends. He seems to like get the work. Like he seems to like write strong papers and do strong work, but he has a hard time speaking up in class. It's not an easy transition to Trinity from Sligo by any means for him. So I wonder if they're trying to, or if Sally Rooney is trying to get you to think about, like, what will this larger migration for the same purpose do to his psyche, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that's also, like, that discomfort is a thing that's wrapped up in both mental illness and class, right?
Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I am sympathetic to her reading in terms of just the ways in which Marianne and Connell are exceptional from the start. Like, I think even like when the story starts in high school, like they're both the smartest people in the room, and that just continues throughout. And
he's really good at hurling too, right? Like he also distinguishes himself in that way.
Exactly. And it is I've watched the show. I haven't read the book, although it's on my bookshelf. It's the sort of typical relationship centered fiction in that, of course, they're in the relationship and that is something that matters a lot to them. But then all of the other characters are obsessed with the fact that they're in this relationship. And people are always asking Marianne, like, what's up between you and Connell? And yeah. I'm just like, don't you have a life outside of these two people? Like, I understand the, I understand part of the Calvinist reading of the novel in terms of this. These are the protagonists. They have protagonist qualities, and we are going to focus on them. That are not atypical of fiction, but are particularly odd in this work. And I'm not sure quite what I make of it. I think you're right that it's possible to read the novel more generously than she does, but I'm still not quite sure where I end up on the novel.
Oh, no, I agree with the the thrust of the review more generally. I think there's a line in the review that I'm gonna lean too heavily on. But there's this there's this throwaway line in the review where she distinguishes this Bildungsroman from two other Bildungsroman that she suggests show like greater growth or development, Candide and Emma. And I like Candide especially, like the ending of Candide is such a like shoulder shrug, right? I mean, like famously so, right? Like we have recognized the problems with optimism and now we don't know what to do. Is this like the end is it's tend your garden, right? It's go home.
Settle and yes, garden somewhere right. else.
yes.
Carry on colonial plantation projects.
correct. And I don't know. I'm not a scholar of contemporary literature, but I feel like there's this tendency to like, to assume complexity and value in old texts and, like read newer texts less generously, I guess. And I think it just strikes me as really weird to compare something like Candide to a novel that came out in the last decade, in terms of like what it has to say about the world in which it is produced. Am I making any sense?
Oh, I think so. I agree with you.
I'm just chewing it over. Yeah.
Yeah. As a scholar of, at least in part, contemporary fiction, I agree with you that that attitude exists.
For sure. There's always this temptation that we have to hook contemporary literature in something older to give it value, to give it depth. Which we don't. The end. Bye, Molly.
As a person who teaches Jane Austen and reads Jane Austen a lot, I want fewer references to Jane Austen in reviews of contemporary literature.
It's you. You did this. You did this to us.
Well, has anything come out in 2021 yet? I mean, so this was a good 2020 little review, but has anything come out in this year that I'm forgetting about?
In terms of Ireland?
Yeah.
Huh, that's a good question. We've been promised more Dairy Girls, but I don't know when.
Oh, we have?
They've started filming season 3, but, you know, with COVID and everything, who knows?
Oh, thank God. That read as a series finale. But
Dairy Girls is maybe a counterexample to our, like, implicit thesis here, because that is very much an Irish story that I think we all universally love.
Yeah, and it's also one about joy, right?
Yeah.
That, like, I think, well, I haven't seen Wild Mountain Time, so I guess I can't make any blogs.
I mean,
like, Normal People's very melancholy, right? Which very much fits with the sort of, like pop culture understanding of a lot of Ireland. But, like, I love Dairy Girls, too. I love Dairy Girls for so many reasons. You know, these young girls, like, there's that scene that ends season 1 where the adults are watching the news and, like, some bomb has just gone off.
Mm-hmm. We should say, Molly, for folks who haven't watched it, this is set, like, in the 90s.
It's set in the 90s in Northern Ireland. and a bomb has gone off, and like the young girls are like, their joy is just like shining through as they do this goofy dance at a school talent
show. Yeah, I find Dairy Girls fascinating in this trend of sort of reevaluating the Troubles and reevaluating Troubles narratives. Like, I think it is a far cheerier version of Anna Burns's novel Milkman in terms of let's look at the Troubles from a different perspective. So Milkman is not a comedy. is not about celebrating joy, but it is about let's set aside this political conflict. Let's look at the sort of internecine experience. Like, it's very much about men taking advantage of that political situation to try and it's a novel about stalking in the end. Like, very much saying, let's privilege different perspectives on the Troubles than are ordinarily represented.
Yep. Even as Jerry Adams is enjoying a resurgence of popularity thanks to his inexplicable Twitter account. Do you guys know about Jerry Adams' Twitter?
I do not.
No, you...
Oh, no. There was just such silence that greeted me. I thought, oh, no, do they not know about Jerry Adams? I mean, of course you know about Jerry Adams. That
was him of the famously sexy voice, yes.
Yes, right. It's like a fine whiskey. He has an ungood ability. Okay, I'm not going to scroll all the way through his thread, but, like, I read – there's, like, a compilation. I mean, you can Google this on your own time if you want. You don't have to listen to me, like, search for it in real time. Just, like – bizarre and inexplicable social media presence on Twitter. So, like, here's a couple choice examples. Dreamt I was eating cream eggs. Woke up this morning, pillow and beard covered in chocolate and cream thingy me, Bob.
What?
Yeah. when you come to the end of a lollipop, when you come to the end of a lollipop, pop goes your heart. He has like these stuffed like rabbits who he like stages weddings for and birthday parties for. he shares like cat memes. Like there's this one I'm looking at right now that's like a cat kind of falling out of a wicker basket, and it says, "I don't know about you, but I'm ready for the weekend."
Wow.
Anyway, he just has this inexplicable Twitter presence, which I also feel is this kind of like trying to reinvent the Troubles, right? Yeah. As he like insists up and down he was never part of the IRA. Now he's trying to doddering old grandpa.
I was going to say this seems just like a new strategy in his denial. Like, instead of just like flat out denials, I'll just like be someone who's like, this person could never have led the IRA.
You hear me?
That's amazing. Thank you very much.
Yeah, okay.
This is wonderful.
I'm gonna be living in that for a while later today.
Yes, I'm blocking part of my Friday afternoon to investigate further.
Well, I guess we all have a third season of Dairy Girls to really look forward to, right?
Yeah, so maybe when Dairy Girls 3 does – season 3 finally appears, we should get back together and talk about it.
Agree. Oh, I can't wait. We should also – we're all going to be vaccinated pretty soon. Maybe we could even just watch it together. What a dream, right?
Oh, my God. That sounds – that I would rather watch that together than Wild Mountain Time together.
Okay. I'll let go. I will happily let go of my dream for Wild Mountain.
I mean, I would do both. At this point, I'm not going to turn down a vaccinated social interaction.
True. All right.
Okay. Thanks, y'all, for talking about this with me.
Thank you for putting it together.
Yeah.